Welcome back, Blindfoldistas. I'm Jonathan, and this is the Invisible Chess Podcast. It's been a fair bit longer than I'd planned since the last episode. Thanks very much for your patience in waiting, and thanks for all of your support for the podcast so far. I've had around 650 downloads in the month since the last of the 12 games of the Midwinter Festivus came out. I know that's next to nothing by the standards of a lot of chess content out there these days, but when I started Invisible Chess, I'd have been delighted to get that many listeners in months when I was releasing new episodes a bunch of times every week, let alone during a hiatus. So thanks for being part of this and helping the podcast find its audience. I'm extremely grateful for you all being here, listening to me warbling on. All of that said, let's get on and talk about Season 2 and what it's going to look like. Fridays, I'm going to stick with the Chernev's Best Shorts series. This is always going to be the podcast's bread and butter, I think. Miniature games that we visualise from start to finish, and when we get to the end, we either find the false mate or work out why one side resigned. And we still got another 980 or so games to get through from Chernev's book, so we're not going to be short of material anytime soon. One of the things I noticed running the series of very short games over Christmas and New Year is that it's a very different experience visualising a game under, say, 10 moves, as opposed to one that's over 20. It's not harder, necessarily. Once you've got the stepping stones method down, you can, at least in theory, go on indefinitely. It's just that it simply takes longer. There's nothing wrong with that, per se, but my aim for the podcast was to generate relatively no or medium intensity material that would allow us to generate a high volume of work over time. For that reason, I'm going to focus mostly on games that last around 10 to 15 moves. Enough to give a bit of a challenge, but not so much so that it takes over our lives and becomes unmanageable. Because what I don't want is people thinking, no, I'll skip it this week. Don't have the time to visualise these games. So I'm aiming for games that play out in 15 moves or fewer, and it should avoid this problem. Whilst Fridays are staying pretty much the same, on Mondays I'm going to start a whole new series of episodes dedicated purely to king and pawn problems. I've often thought that pawn endgames are undervalued by many chess players, not so much for their theoretical value, although you will find yourself getting extra points in blitz and rapid games online against opponents rated 2000 and even higher because they simply don't know the fundamentals, but more just as a training resource. King and pawn puzzles are an excellent way to polish our calculation and visualisation skills, precisely because of the simplified nature of the positions. It's not just that there are fewer pieces on the board, but it's the way that the pawns move, being so much more limited than other pieces too. In much the same way as learning maths at school, they didn't teach us quadratic equations straight away, we did hours and hours of basic addition and subtraction exercises first. Pawn endings are perfect for learning how to calculate and how to visualise, and when we have those skills down, we can then transfer them to more complex positions. And aside from all of that, king and pawn endings are often fascinating fun to solve just for themselves. I thought it would be fun to work through a whole series of positions right from the absolute basics of kings and a single pawn on one side, right up to the very complex with multiple pawns each. There are a lot of suitable collections in any number of endgame books, but why not stick to Chernev, I thought, and take material from Practical Chess Endings, a book he published back in the 1960s. There are around 80 king and pawn puzzles in that book, so at one a week, and factoring in breaks here and there, it's going to take getting on for a couple of years to get to the end of that lot. How far can we get before we reach material that's too tough for us? Can we master king and pawn endings doing these visualisation exercises once a week? Let's find out together. Now, if you've been with Invisible Chess for a while, you'll know that in Season 1, on Wednesdays, we had an episode dedicated to absolute beginners to blindfold chess and visualisation training. For Season 2, though, I'm going to put that on hold. That's partly just down to time, Zeit not being the chess player's perennial enemy, but also because the first dozen or so weeks of the Pawn Endgame series are going to involve kings and a single pawn. So there's going to be plenty of accessible material available as it is. If you are very new to blindfold chessing, though, I'd also recommend going back over the Fresh Fridge, aka Noob Start Here, episode that I put out last November and December. That sort of training is the sort of thing that you can do over and over again. It's not a one-shot deal. Don't feel you necessarily have to be looking for new material every week as a beginner, or a newcomer, or just getting back into it. you can certainly get a lot out of revisiting episodes that you've already listened to before. Instead of Fresh Fridge, on Wednesdays, I'm not going to have a podcast episode at all. I'm going to publish something on the Invisible Chest newsletter. You can sign up to my Substack for free. There's a link in the show notes. And the newsletter, if I'm honest, is not something that I've made full use of yet. So in an attempt to fix that, I'm going to commit to publishing one new article a week over the next 12 weeks. And these are all going to be classic games that, for various reasons, I think chess players should know. I'm not sure that systematically building our chess culture, for want of a better phrase, is a particularly fashionable thing in chess these days. But it seems to me that it's pretty essential if you really want to achieve progress in our play. It's odd that, unlike chess, in other fields this sort of thing is taken as a given. There's that famous story, isn't there, about the young author going to Hemingway for writing advice and getting an enormous reading list in return. Know your field. Know your craft. If you want to see further than the next guy, stand on the shoulders of giants. That sort of thing. And it's advice, to my mind anyway, that seems particularly apt for an activity that is extensively pattern-oriented, as chess is. But aside from the chess improvement angle, yes, if we know Lasker's double bishop sacrifice, or Nimzowitsch's zugzwang, or Fischer playing against Spassky's hanging pawns, say, they become weapons we can add to our own arsenals. But what about just for the love of the game? Maybe you're also a sports fan, or you love movies as well. What if we could stream any event from our chosen sport or any film directly into our heads, instantly, at any moment, whatever we happen to be doing? Any of the greatest sporting moments in history? The Oscar-winning performances of our choice? How much would we pay for that kind of service? But as chess fans, and especially as Blindfold Easters, we're lucky because we can do exactly this. We want to see that Morphy Queensack game from the New York Congress of 1857. Yeah, we can do that. We can have any games from St. Petersburg or Moscow or Sousse or Buenos Aires, Lone Pine or Hastings. Any game we want from any of these places or any other place from any year. And it doesn't need to cost us a single penny. And you know what? Not only can we do this, I think we should be doing it. So Wednesdays are going to be all about getting some of the greatest chess games ever played into our heads so we can carry them around with us and play through them whenever we want. So that's what I'm planning for Invisible Chess over the next few months. I hope you'll join me along the way. So hit like and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any podcast episodes. And don't forget to venture over to Substack to sign up for the newsletter. Okay, if you've made it this far, here's a fun problem I found in another of Erning Chernev's books, The Bright Side of Chess. It's composed, he says, by a chap called Glass, but I'm afraid other than that I don't have any more details. Anyway, here we go. There's a white king on e1, a rook on c4, and a pawn on e2. Black has a king on e3. That's white king, e1, white rook, c4, white pawn, e2. Black's king is on e3. It's white to play, and mate in four moves. Have fun with that, Blindfold Easters, and until we come back next Monday for the start of season 2, happy chessing!